This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this StockBox interview.
The CEO of MyNexia. Now, MyNexia, we did cover in a bit of an interview few weeks ago, I think, Richard. It's really a mining equity finance for perhaps a smaller investor to help enable them to get access to IPOs and placings. You're also chairman of Marula Mining and here today really to talk about the general space in mining and what's going on, what's coming across your desk. But how are you doing? Welcome back.
I'm very well. Happy New Year. It's a while since we spoke. But yeah, you're right. The platform, and our private market is the platform we run to do the sort of bringing the smaller issue and the sort of, well, we're getting bigger tickets now, but yeah, the smaller investor together. So it's working quite well.
Yes, it's a nice little platform, really. I'm sure we'll cover a lot more, particularly when some deals come down the pipe, because, of course, you know, yeah, it's not always so easy to get in with the bigger brokers. So, but, you know, we investors still want the access to the IPOs or the placings. But, I mean, today, I mean, Indaba is quite soon. It's what, a couple of weeks away? Yeah, basically 2 weeks away. In fact, it'll be finishing 2 weeks today. You're heading down, aren't you?
Yep. There was a bit of a hiatus after I left investment banking and didn't go down, but actually the deals are done there. And I think it gets the market going again. You have the pre-Christmas event here with one-to-one and Minds and Money and all the rest of it. But I think when the Indaba thing comes around, that gets everyone excited. It always gives a little bit of a catalyst to the market. And by Jove, do we need it? Because the markets at the moment, as you know, they're shocking. They're absolutely shocking. So even when we see decent deals coming across the platform, it's you have to be honest with people and say, look, cracking deal, but I just don't know if the appetite's out there at the moment. People aren't putting their hands in their pocket, and we need to break that malaise. I think that's going to be a bit of a struggle, but we'll get there, I'm sure.
Maybe it comes from Indaba, like you said. I'll be watching the markets in a couple of weeks and see what happens. I mean, I do find it interesting because, of course, you've got the S&P 500 broke all-time highs, I think, only this week. The NASDAQ broke it a few weeks ago, and the Dow Jones broke it way before Christmas. So you've got the big indices in the United States breaking all-time highs. But yet, I kind of echo your sentiment that there's still perhaps a lack of cash. Maybe is it just in our sector? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wish I had a crystal ball and knew that. Look, gold's above $2,000 an ounce.
Mm.
I think, you know, we were going to touch on uranium as well. That's a real bull market at the moment. And there's something like 47 reactors being built at the moment or in the pipeline to be built. You've got the Russia sort of Ukraine issues going on as well. Kazakhstan, I think, still produces most of the world's uranium. So there's got to be opportunity out there for other you know, other companies and more production, because we're getting into a demand supply squeeze there on the uranium side. And gosh, I never think I'd speak about uranium. You know, you normally go on about copper, gold, lithium, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's one of the weird metals out there. And there's a few companies I'm going to go and see whilst at Indaba and see, you know, what are their financing plans, what are their funding needs, and where you go. And you've got smaller ones. I'm slightly very close territory to where Marulla has their lithium project. You've got Neo Energy,
indeed,
with Sean Heathcote, and they're, you know, they've got a cracking paleo channel with uranium in there. You're just south of the Orange River in very northern South Africa, so the geology doesn't obey political boundaries. So you've got a lot of uranium up there in Namibia. So, you know, northwest South Africa is going to be the same geology. So those are quite exciting ones as well.
Mm. No, I'd heard about that, but I wasn't aware that Namibia was prolific for uranium. I mean, we obviously know Saskatchewan and the northern territories there of Canada is very well known for uranium. But yeah, Namibia as well, with a couple of US companies I'm aware of who are operating there. And of course, as you mentioned, the Neo Energy Metals. I mean, yeah, I heard the other day from someone that...
Rossing mine up there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's a big operation. And I heard the other day that, yes, you're right, a lot of uranium comes from Kazakhstan, but Kazatomprom had actually said publicly they can't fulfill their obligations. So it's not even that they can't take on new orders, they're going to struggle to actually fulfill existing orders. And I think Cameco is saying something similar along those lines. And what's the uranium price done? Like, so sort of circa 20 US dollars per pound up to over 100, isn't it, at the moment, somewhere like that, with forecasts going, well, I've heard of 500.
Yeah, I think the forecasts are very bullish. And the last time this all happened, I think it was Cameco, wasn't it? It was a Cigar Lake mine. They had to let it flood. The doors weren't quite as waterproof as they'd hoped. And that had another sort of supply-demand squeeze. I mean, the issue with uranium and buying into uranium stocks, I think, is still that fear that when something goes wrong, it goes, you know, cataclysmically wrong. Look at, you know, Fukushima. But the flip side could be said for all the coal-fired power stations. I mean, the investment banks and the insurance groups now will not insure and won't fund thermal coal unless it's on their own doorstep. And that probably does more damage than, you know, okay, Chernobyl and Fukushima was pretty severe, but the damage done over the years with the coal stuff. So I think people have to get their head around where the energy supply is going to come from. It can't all be solar and wind.
No, the European Union, I think, only last month classed uranium or nuclear power as a green source of power, which was, you know, fantastic. I was so glad I heard that finally. It's taken them long enough to declare that. But yeah, that was classed as a green source of power. And again, someone told me something the other day that if someone had their whole life on powered by nuclear, the waste from that person's life would fit into a Coca-Cola can.
All right, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And I don't know how true that is, but I'm sure this person wouldn't be lying to me. But yeah, I mean, as long as you've got somewhere safe to store it, it is a very clean, green source of baseload power. And I've been saying this for a few years now, and maybe it's finally cottoning on, but I think there is still a bit of a fear around that. But there's also not many opportunities, are there, either? I mean, you think, what opportunities are there to invest in uranium stocks? Certainly in London. I mean, what can you name? Neo Energy? Power Metals have got something over in the Northern Territories.
Yellow,
you know, I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, you've got Yellow Cake as well there, as I mentioned.
But Yellow Cake, yeah.
And it's not a trendy, I guess it's not a trendy market, but I think there's a good old upside in it. I mean, gold at 2,000, where's gold going to carry on going to? 2.5, you've got US elections coming up. Dear old Trump seems to be running, you know, leading the race on the Republican side. And so it looks like there'll be a head off with him and Biden again.
Well, my bet is he's going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to create market uncertainty. That always helps the gold price, doesn't it? You've got elections here in the UK this year as well. You know, so you've got a few other factors coming in there that are going to help it'll increase the volatility, and I think, you know, gold's going to continue heading up, you know, above the 2,000 mark and probably towards 2,500.
Yeah. So what will you be looking for next week? Do you have a bit of a plan of action for Indaba, who you want to get around and see?
What we've been quite successful doing, I'm working with a group at the moment, but a lot of investors, and we chatted about this before, are looking at mitigating their sort of exposure to the dollar or whatever, and really are looking at physical gold and physical metals as a product, or as a product of storage of value, etc. So a lot of our bigger German, Swiss investors, Scandinavian as well, are saying, look, can we structure deals where we almost do a gold forward in the same way that the PE funds often do it? And can I please be repaid in ounces of gold or whatever, pounds of copper, etc., if I'm going to help do a pre-production financing for a project that only needs, you know, 1-2 million quid? So those are interesting deals, and I think there's a lot more of those going on at the moment, either privately or more structured with some of the funds and even the smaller funds.
So that actually, you're saying they take payment, if you like, in the commodity itself?
Yeah. So if you've got so Fairburn Mining, let's say, is 9 months away from production, needs another couple of million quid. It's pretty much de-risked. You would forward or lend, if you like, 5 million quid to get it all going, and be repaid at gold at, say, you know, $100 below spot, $200 below spot. And the deeper the discount, the more risk. You know, it sort of equates to the risk in the project. So that's a technique we've used and have seen. We used it in Panama with Verigold. We're looking at some other projects as well, and I think that's a you'll see. I think the CEOs and the CFOs of mining companies have to be a little bit more dynamic and thinking out of the box. And how do I finance my project? It's not just I'm going to go back to the ASX or the LSE or whatever and try and bang the drum. There's too many people doing that at the moment, and they just have to be a little more flexible on how they think about things.
Okay, and they would be going to what, banks or sort of family offices, hedge funds?
It's family office. It traditionally was, you know, the Orions, the RCFs and the banks of this world, the funds. But now individuals, high net worths, are saying, well, actually, I can just do this bilaterally or with some assistance. Get involved in some of these deals.
Okay, interesting.
You can put an equity stake in there as well. You know, it doesn't have to just be a gold board or a gold loan.
Yeah, indeed. And then the family offices they'll get that gold, for example, and as a store of wealth, and just keep it, or indeed move it on. Yeah, okay, or building generational wealth through, that's not bad.
Yeah, and it can get delivered, you know, to Geneva, Zurich.
Yeah, indeed. Whatever. Interesting. Okay, yeah, okay. So what sort of things are coming across your desk at the moment? I mean, you must see quite a few deals. You're quite picky, I think, on what you follow.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, we probably look at, 15, 20 deals a month. We do have to be, you know, I don't think I've ever heard a CEO say, you know, I've got an average project and I think I'm fairly valued to the market. Everyone's got a fantastic project and they're undervalued. And ironic, you know, they all need a bit of money. But yeah, you do have to be honest and say, look, the market appetite is such at the moment that, you know, be remiss of me to promise you that we can raise $500,000 here, $500,000 there, when it just isn't available. There's a lot of lithium projects still going around. Some would disagree with me, but I think if you've got a hard rock spodumene pegmatite body, you are at much better chances of A, getting into production, and B, raising some money on the back of that than you are with a clay or a brine.
Yeah, okay.
The clays and the brines are easier to physically extract, but the chemistry set is very, very difficult. So that's one thing I always look at. I'd rather look at a hard rock spodumene. And we've seen a lot of the Australian lithium plays stumble lately. The lithium price has dropped.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weaker sort of clay stroke brine type projects that will stumble. Whereas if you've got a hard rock spodumene product, let's say, it's I think you're a little bit more a bit more protected against the market.
So is it the clays and the brines, you say that the end product, the chemistry is just not as good, or is it more difficult to actually get out the end product?
Physically, it's easier to dig.
Yeah.
But yeah, the chemistry set then gets a little bit more complicated. And then you get to the even further down the line where you're trying to extract lithium from the sort of geothermal stuff.
Mm.
You know, the chemistry set there is very complicated. I'm not a metallurgist. I'm a humble geologist. But
yeah, but when you say chemistry set, are you meaning the actual then extraction process, getting the sort of lithium? Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Actually. Getting it. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I mean, the lithium price has come back. Yeah, quite considerably. I'm not sure many lithium producers or certainly not explorers. They don't make any money. But you know, producers will be struggling to make a lot of anything really at this current lithium price. But
yeah,
I think
you really need to be making a carbonate. I think you need to upgrade and
go even further down the beneficiation line. Really.
Yeah, I mean, with my Marulla hat on, that's certainly what we would like to do at Blessburg up in.
Is it really?
Yeah, I think that's you get so much more value for the investment and the capex to get the carbonate plant going. The product is. You know, it's just more refined. It's much, much higher value.
What do you think's giving the lithium price volatility?
Just many projects coming online, but I think there's a bit of a.
Is it finding its feet still, really?
Yeah, I think so, because people are looking at all these projects and, oh God, you know, if they all come online, you've got X thousand, you know, tons and da da da. But I think you need to look at it a little bit differently and say, well, actually, which ones are viable? Because not all of them are. And then I think you'd have a bit of a correction in the price. But, you know, good projects succeed and the poor ones fail. So there's a bit of Darwinian evolution there as well.
Okay. And what's the vibe, do you think, amongst the juniors then at the moment? Or perhaps, let's think about the whole kind of spectrum, really, from the majors through to the mids and the juniors and any kind of M&A that's going on in the space. One of the companies that comes on Stopbox a fair bit, East Star Resources, who have got copper over in Kazakhstan, they won one of the BHP Billiton sort of grant funding for $500,000 to go and do some porphyry explorations. They will now have two exploration programs running in tandem, the VMS discoveries that they're going after and the porphyries. So, I mean, $500,000, okay, it's not loads of money, but, you know, it's still a decent chunk, isn't it? And I'm sure BHP are doing that for a few. So, you know, what's the general vibe, do you think, from the top level?
Yeah, they wouldn't be doing that out of charity either. So they've got if you're giving a company $500,000, they've got an eye on them. So they're, you know, but I would hope that there is a kickstart in M&A activity. I think you will see it in gold and copper first.
Okay.
And it may be the only route for some of the mid-tier and the juniors to see value in their projects is to say, look, let's have a farm in with one of the bigger boys, because trying to raise the money on your own is very, very tough at the moment. You know, we got all the geopolitical stuff going on as well. It's making people a little bit nervous. So I think there is opportunity in the M&A space to pick up assets, I think, at the moment, at probably relatively good value for the buyer.
Mm.
Even at the current prices, even at $2,000 gold, you can still pick up projects, because I think, you know, funding is tricky. And you've got geopolitical pressures as well. I mean, you know, look at Panama, look at First Quantum and Cobre Panama, and that's created a contagion effect within the country. And a lot of the projects are stopping, not just because of what First Quantum had done. And, you know, I don't know the details of falling out with the government and not paying your taxes and your royalty is probably not a very good way of trying to keep your license. But it has affected everyone else.
Mm.
And then the sort of NGOs and whatnot have rallied around and seen that as an opportunity to shut down an industry that creates, you know, 5-7% of GDP. Well, I think Cobre Panama is that. I'm wrong. Cobre Panama on its own, I think, produced 5% of the GDP.
Right. Okay.
So they kind of shoot themselves in the foot a bit, but we'll see how all that pans out.
Yeah, indeed. And where do you think? Well, Which jurisdictions do you think are going to be the most attractive to do business in terms of mining and exploration? Are we talking, you know, the tried and tested ones like Australia or Canada, where, you know, there's more regulation? Or, you know, I've got quite a good feeling about Africa. I feel Africa is very underexplored, and Africa could really have its sort of moment. What's your thoughts?
I agree with you. I think sub-Saharan Africa is prime. And places like Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa is going through its own issues at the moment, basically the infrastructure. It's all falling apart. It'll be interesting to see what the load shedding's like when people do get out to Indaba this year. But Transnet, the rail network is really struggling. Eskom is really struggling. And, you know, it's supposed to be a first world country, but the infrastructure there is just falling apart, and falling apart rapidly. But places like Zimbabwe are back on the map. Obviously, I've got first-hand experience at the moment with Tanzania and Kenya.
Yeah.
I mean, doing work in Tanzania is so easy. Their arms are sort of wide open for you. They make life very easy. It's easy to invest. The communities are embracing what you're trying to do. As long as you engage with them early, there'll be a big focus again in Indaba on corporate social responsibility, or the ESG side, or whatever you want to put on it. And I think the fanfare about all that has died down. Everyone is now, it's the accepted norm. You think about that first. You don't try and put sticky plaster over it later on. And that's now become accepted, and funds and investors, even individual investors, are not interested in companies that are going to ride roughshod over you saw what happened to Rio when they blasted a load of Aboriginal caves in the Pilbara.
Yeah.
Don't do that. It's not acceptable anymore at any level.
Yeah, not at all, no. I think Saudi's quite interesting as well with what they're doing, perhaps diversifying away from oil, looking at inward investment in terms of actually exploiting for commodities in country, but also they've got the cash to go outside as well. And there's already been some sort of deals been done with some London companies there. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on Saudi, but I think that's a jurisdiction to watch both on, in terms of it's intriguing in terms of, I think, of what they might have in the ground and companies going in to explore there, because I'm not aware really of any projects on the ground, but they're going to put their money where their mouth is, and they could be perhaps a catalyst for just buying up a lot of stuff. So they're a key player, like they've been a key player for oil for so many years.
No, I agree with you, and it's such a vast area. I would assume less than 1% has been explored.
Probably,
base metals and whatnot. I don't know how they're going to go about it. I haven't been out to Saudi. I've not really worked in the Middle East. We do have, and again, it goes back to these gold loans and physical metal. A lot of Emirati, so out of Dubai, Abu Dhabi, etc. There's a lot of money there that wants to get their hands on physical material. If you wanted to buy gold on the market in Dubai, you're probably paying 5% over spot. Looking, if the price is, you know, let's say it's $2,000, which it pretty much is at the moment, looking at my phone, you've got to buy it at $2,100. Whereas if you can do a gold forward and take a little bit of risk and someone construct it for you, you can probably get gold at 18, 17, 1600, depending on the risk profile of the project. So that's happening more and more. I would think, going back to Saudi, I digress slightly. I would think there'll be some sort of state-run, if they haven't already, state-run geophysics survey done over the whole area and see what anomalies pop up.
Comes up.
I'm sure they've already done it. But
probably.
I'm not as in tune to Saudi as some.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if I can ask you to perhaps, when you're in Indaba in a couple of weeks, to just try and take note of the general feeling or the appetite, which I'm sure you'll get a vibe of quite quickly, but I'd be keen to get the general feeling for the sector and the appetite for what commodities, but also where they're going to come from, what jurisdictions. And if you can have that in mind as you're walking around and make any mental notes, and then we can chat again in a couple of weeks and get your lowdown from Indaba.
And we'll probably realise that everything we've said in the last half an hour is completely wrong, and it's the reverse. But let's hope not.
Well, that's why we do it, isn't it? And that's why you go to these events. So I hope you enjoy it, Rich. But thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, Mark. Take care. Speak to you soon.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programmes at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.